Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Pretty relaxed. It's Sunday, the day we're filming this, so yeah, just been watching the football all day, to be honest. Not really much else to do. Just waiting for the various international cricket to start in the next sort of week or so. I'm looking forward to that getting underway. So, yeah, England, they had their inter-squad practice match, didn't they, yesterday, which was an interesting watch considering the live stream kept constantly buffering, yeah, for me at least. So, yeah, it was good to see some kind of international cricket back. But, yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for the main events in the respective series to get underway. But, yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks.
Well, that's very good to hear, mate. I'm glad that you're doing well. And, of course, also joining us on the County Cricket Podcast today is a legendary Kiwi off-spinner who, over the course of 11 illustrious seasons at my beloved County of Warwickshire, firmly cemented himself as one of the greatest overseas players to ever don the bear and ragged staff. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my absolute privilege to tell you that today's guest on the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Warwickshire legend Jeetan Patel. So, Jeet, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming on to our podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, no worries, gentlemen. Good, thank you. And it's good morning here in New Zealand. Good, mates. Kids got to school safely, so that's a good start. And now we've just got the day to plan. But you know, it's nice to be here, gentlemen, and you know, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, no, trust me, the pleasure's all ours, Jeets. It really is, and of course...
You may not say that after.
We'll see. But just for the listeners at home then, just to kind of give you a quick summary of today's podcast then, we're going to start by talking about Jeets' illustrious Warwickshire career. Then we're going to talk a bit about the 2020 season, of course, how it all wound down to your retirement, Jeetan. And then, of course, we are going to finish today's podcast with everybody's favourite segment, which is, of course, teammates. So to kickstart today's podcast then, Jeets, let's take it right back to the origin of your cricketing journey then. What's your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Yeah, I mean, like I've spoken about this a few times now, but look, I started as a three-year-old. My father was a keen cricketer. Well, he says that. Well, he was certainly keen. He wasn't very good, but he was certainly keen. You know, his Indian heritage, he then moved to England when he was mid-teenage years. And he followed a lot of county cricket, actually. And I think he fell in love with the pure game, the Red Bull game there. And then he moved out to New Zealand. And obviously, I was his little man that he could enforce cricket upon, and it was probably ended up, you know, just in the hallway. It was my first real memory, if I think hard enough at it, was just cricket in the hallway with Dad. And then, you know, I was lucky enough to start at age 5 and join teams, and from there, it sort of progressed, and it became what was Dad's passion into one of my passions, really. But look, watching cricket on TV was built for that. And I loved it when I was a youngster, so that's all I did, to be honest with you.
Well, that's very, very early, to say the least.
I mean, yeah, I think I started when I started playing when I was like 7.
Yeah, I think it's got older. Those sort of things as the years have gone on. I mean, my daughter's just started, she's 6, but she's going on 7. I think they don't really like to push it too early on kids, and you know, fair enough, the coordination's probably lacking a little at that age. And bowling's very difficult. It's not one of those arts that you just pick up like throwing a spear. So it's, yeah, well, eventually, I mean, I was lucky enough to play a little bit with the old man at earlier stages to be able to join in and fly into the game.
Do you think they push it more from a younger age in England or in New Zealand, from what you've sort of observed?
It's hard to tell, mate. It's constantly changing. I think the numbers in New Zealand have depleted over years, and they're starting to grow again, which is exciting. But they've introduced a new little format for kids to play. It's called dual pitch, where you effectively play two games at once. So the kids aren't sitting around doing nothing at any time. They're either fielding, batting, or bowling over an hour period. So it actually keeps them more engaged. And it's come out of Australia. It's actually a really cool program. My daughter played her first game the other day, and I was quite impressed. Now, there wasn't one moment where she was like sat there just watching someone else bat or bowl or field. So, yeah, look, it's just about inclusion. And look, let's be honest, if they're having fun, then they're more likely to stay in the game. So that's what they're promoting over here anyway. And I think with England, it's more about tradition. It's more about, you know, the social side of it as a kid. The parents, I suppose, want to go to the cricket club and have a drink on a Friday night, and the kids can run around and play. And it's that's another way of just getting people there, because to get the kids there, you need to get the parents there as well.
Yeah, of course. Joe, I did just want to ask you this, because we are talking about younger age cricket. Did you ever play diamond cricket?
Yeah, I think diamond cricket is the kind of thing that you can play. Like, if I was to play diamond cricket now, it'd be quite a bit of a laugh. It's the kind of thing that you could play on like a Friday night. You know, or maybe like, yeah, just on a weekend, like in the winter, maybe for just a bit of a laugh. But yeah, but when I was a kid, I used to take it quite seriously.
Same.
It was quite good fun. But yeah, I feel like obviously in England, they have quite a good few initiatives now, obviously All Stars, and they were going to bring a new thing in. I won't say Cricket Dynamos for this year. I might be wrong on that name, but they were going to bring it in for the 2020 season. And then, yeah, they didn't really get it underway. So yeah, I mean, they obviously have a few good initiatives, but yeah, diamond cricket, it's one of the games that you just can't beat, really. Like I say, like it will be a laugh to play now, obviously not seriously, but it will be quite a bit of a laugh. And yeah, it was always good fun, diamond cricket, so yeah. But Jeeton, let's talk a little bit about your cricketing inspirations, because obviously you mentioned your dad being one of the driving forces for you from an early age. But in terms of professional cricketers, who did you really look up to as a youngster?
Sir Richard Hadlee was, you know, New Zealand's jet at the time. You know, him and Martin Crowe and the boys, and I think the 92 World Cup when I was age 12 was really, really hit home, and it made sense to me that, you know, there's a pathway here. Or when I say pathway, at 12 years old, you're not looking at pathways to the New Zealand team, but you can see that these guys are playing the game I love at a professional on a professional stage and doing well enough and on the world scene. So, you know, the 92 World Cup was a year for us where New Zealand actually did really well as well. So those would be my inspirations. And then, you know, as you grew up, it was the Warneys, and when I started to take spin more seriously, the Shane Warnes, the Ciclanes, the, you know, the Muralees, at the earlier stage. But it's always just been there, and I think it doesn't really matter. It never really mattered. I mean, Carl Hooper was someone I enjoyed watching play cricket. It didn't really matter who was playing. It was just the fact that cricket was on TV. I was probably one of those badgers that would watch anything. So, you know, skip school and be able to go to the base reserve and watch a bit of cricket. Hopefully my ex-principals aren't listening. But and I don't promote that to any kids. But however, it was something that we did when we were kids. You know, we'd sort of, and even then we'd sort of get opportunities throughout school to be able to go watch the Wellington team play or the professional teams play, because that's the path we wanted to take, and we were lucky enough to do that.
Yeah, it's not exactly a background to be able to watch cricket, is it?
Oh, no, it's perfect. Yeah. And he's a McDonald's outside, so it's, you know, it's great.
it's in terms of worldwide grounds, definitely on my list as one I'd like to visit, because yeah, as you say, it's pretty perfect. Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned a few spinners there, leg spinners and off spinners as well. What made you want to become an off spinner?
Nothing really. It just sort of happened. I was a budding fast bowler, you'd say, and I was never fast enough. But yeah, So I suppose everyone starts as a seamer, don't they? They run in, start bowling seam up. I think the kids at a very young age will bowl spin because their wrists aren't quite as strong, and they'll accidentally do it. But it just happened at first 11 training midweek. I started bowling spin in the nets because I'd had enough and I was bored and there were still guys to bat. And then bowled it on the weekend because we needed a spinner. We didn't have one and it sort of went okay. Following week, go to rep practice with Wellington and they'd heard about it. So they wanted to have a look and it just started from there. It started out of nowhere, really. I don't think Dad was overly impressed because he'd probably put so much time into and perfecting my away swingers, but look, it was fun, and it meant that I was going to make teams easier because I was probably targeting a real specific market. And I didn't realise that at the time, but it meant I got to play more. So I was happy to carry on with it.
Yeah, I think it paid off to say the least.
Yeah.
I still don't know.
But for me, that is weirdly similar, to be honest. I'm a failed seamer as well, of course, not to the same extent of talent Jeets, of course. But yeah, I went seam, tried a bit of leg spin, horribly failed at that, went back to seam, bowled four wides in a game, and then decided, off spin, why not?
Yeah, it's an easy art, mate. So why wouldn't you take it? Off spin's an easy art.
Exactly, but it does take a lot of patience, though. I must admit, cause at least with leg spin, in particular against right-handers, at least you can spin the ball both ways, because nowadays you're not allowed to bowl the doosra. So that was the thinking originally behind the leg spin. But yeah, off spin, it's been quite fun, to be fair. It's nice when the ball does turn a little bit, turns into the off stump.
You got to wade through the mud to get there, I suppose. Once you get there, it's okay.
Definitely. And earlier as well, Jeets, you mentioned about your dad, and he had this profound love for county cricket. And I just wanted to know if you also had that same love. Did you always envision yourself becoming a county cricketer, or did that just come naturally?
No, certainly not, mate. Not as a youngster anyway. But Dad would always talk about how he'd go to county games all around the country. You know, if he was working in Birmingham, he actually showed me this pub. Well, it is a pub now, the Fighting Cox in Moseley. And right at the top, it used to be, back in his day, he reckons it used to be the Royal Mail. They used to have a post office there. And in the top floor, they had this sort of big window that looked into Edgbaston. And it's in Moseley. So it's a good walk away. But he used to sit up there in his lunch breaks and watch. And so that was a funny story when he told me 2 years ago. Like, I've been there for 9 years already, and he tells me 2 years ago. But yeah, he loved it. But then I reckon when Sir Richard had made a big career out of Notts, and, you know, he was doing so well for Notts, and I think that was quite weird. It was like, wow, he can play 12 months of the year. You know, he can go abroad to England and keep playing. And, I mean, I was a kid, mate, so I was 16, 17 when you start to hear these things. And, you know, then you start to hear about the others, like the Glenn Turners from New Zealand, or, you know, Brian Lara, you know, creating records around the world. And you know, if you do a bit more research about it, all of a sudden you realise that most international players would be thriving to get there, and purely just to keep advancing their game. So, look, it wasn't on the radar at age 19, 20. In fact, it probably wasn't on the radar at age 20, 26. It just sort of came about out of nowhere, really.
Well, that's very interesting, and of course we'll talk about that. But yes, Brian Charles Lara, good choice there to bring his name up. 501 out, legend of the Bears, really was.
Yeah.
But of course, I do have to mention this then, Jeets. How did the move to Warwickshire actually materialise? When did you first figure out that you're going to become a Warwickshire player?
Yeah, I mean, again, I've spoken to it before, but I met an agent on the 2008 tour when I was with the New Zealand team. I didn't play a game on that tour. Well, I played two warm-up games, so it was a long 7 weeks, but look, it was good fun. I certainly enjoyed myself. Met an agent through one of the other players, and I just said, look, yeah, take my details. I didn't expect anything of it. I don't think he did either. He was probably doing the polite thing. And then get a phone call in the middle of the night, sort of around early 2009, to say, look, we've got some interest. Would you be keen? I was like, yeah, well, of course I would. Worked out what the commitment would be and how it would affect my summer. And it didn't really, my winter. And it didn't affect my winter because we didn't have anything on. And I was in a funny phase with New Zealand cricket at the time. I was sort of pigeonholed to white ball cricket, and I wanted to get back into playing red ball. So it was just, like I said, a random phone call, and there was a spot available, and we made it work. And then, you know, I arrived at Edgbaston, and at my first training, the legend Darren Maddy, snapped his knee, and it was like, whoa, okay, this isn't how it's supposed to pan out. You know, you play with these, you look forward to play with these guys, and then he's out for the season. But it was a different year. That first year, I probably didn't bowl as well as I would have liked, but it was cool to know, work out what it was about, how hard it is, because in New Zealand we don't play as much cricket, and then you get to the UK and you're playing every second day, if not every day. So it was a great little grounding before it became really real.
Definitely. And I did just want to ask this as well. Did you find that really difficult to adapt to that, or did you find it quite natural?
Yeah, I did. Considering I'd been there in 2008 and we'd been on the tour, we'd been bowling with Duke's balls, it was I should have been okay. But I just really struggled with the Duke's ball initially. That whole year, I couldn't get it right, and it was quite disappointing. But I was also going through a transitional phase with my action and how I was bowling as well. So, like I said, I wanted to push back for the Red Bull team, for the New Zealand team. And, you know, I had a lot of work to do with technically. I'd sort of gone away from that because I'd been a white ball specialist. But look, that's okay. You know, hindsight, that's okay. I'm okay with it now. I just needed to understand it was going to be okay. And yeah, and from there, it was from, I suppose, from that year on, I'd learned my lesson, and then I started to really enjoy it. I think the Duke's ball is a great ball to bowl now.
Yeah, I think a lot of English fans across the country, Joe, I know you're smiling there, of course. Duke's over Kookaburra, am I correct, Joe?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I wish Duke's views all over. all over the country. All over the world. I definitely know a few England players would agree. Obviously, the likes of Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad. So, yeah, no. Dukes over Kookaburras for me. Even though we use the white, I think we use the white Kookaburra, don't we? Over here.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Well, Jeets, actually, just touching upon that, what do you prefer personally? Because you've bowled with both. Which one was better?
I think the Dukes ball sits better on its axis. So for spin bowlers especially, it actually allows a spinner to hit the seam more often. I think the Kookaburras can be weighted a little bit different all the time. They're not always, and I'm not saying a Dukes is always the same, but for some reason, it doesn't always sit on its axis quite nicely. And, you know, when it's, the thing is when it's the opposite, like when the, I feel when the Kookaburra is newer, the seam is more pronounced and it grips better. As it gets older, it loses that. And whereas I think the Dukes ball, I felt anyway, because of the lacquer over the seam, was actually more difficult to bowl with a newer ball or brand new ball especially, but it stayed easier to bowl with for longer. You could feel it better on your fingers, and you know, a lot of spin bowling is about feel. It's about how you feel with how the ball feels as it comes out of your hands. So you have to play with both if you're going to play worldwide, and you have to get used to both. It just takes a little bit of time. And you know, I was lucky that I had 20 years of playing cricket all over, so I had a lot of time on my side to learn what I was doing.
Have you ever opened the ball then? With a red ball.
Yeah. There's been a couple of games where, you know, circumstantial really. Like sometimes if there's only three or four overs before lunch, I might get a crack. If it's wet, you know, sometimes wickets, I find in England anyway, the wickets, they're getting better now, but we're either underprepared or overprepared. So if they're underprepared, they'd spin quite early. And if they were overprepared, they'd tend to spin on the late day one, if that makes sense. So it was finding that balance. And look, it's one of those things, you know, batters have weaknesses, so being able to exploit them at a certain time. And some, you may say, start poorly against spin, so why wouldn't you use spinners to start up? You know, if you're going to look after the ball, you don't mess it up too much for the seamers, then they're not going to be too annoyed.
That's a very good point.
But bringing it back again to Warwickshire then, Jeets, I suppose we have to talk about your debut, because, again, in terms of modern Bears performances, this is the stuff of legend. It's as simple as that. I know the game itself maybe did peter out as a very high-scoring draw, but I just wanted to know your thoughts. What were you thinking, first of all? What were your thoughts on that day heading into your first ever game at Edgbaston?
I suppose like any other game, I was pretty nervous. Like I still get nervous now thinking if I was to play again, like even my last game, I was just as nervous as I was my first game. But you just never know. Cricket's such a funny thing. Yeah, pretty nervous, pretty excited. You know, you get to walk out to Edgbaston and play your first professional game. Quite keen to prove to myself and to others that I was good enough to be there. Maybe tried a bit too hard, to be honest with you, in the end. I think the ultimate thing is you just want to enjoy yourself. You want to enjoy the moment. But, you know, it's easy to say those things, but to figure out how to do that was a bit different. And like, for me, trying to enjoy cricket was just trying to enjoy my mate's success. And let's be honest, I'd only been there for a few weeks, so I don't really know anyone too well. But look, it was good fun, mate. You know, we didn't perform as well as we would have liked in that game, but we walked away with a draw that helped us, I suppose. So it was handy enough.
I have to ask this as well. Was that the best that you've ever batted? Because for those who don't know at home, of course, 120 from 155 balls, 16 boundaries, 2 sixes, which were the only sixes in the entire Bears innings, of course, alongside Jonathan Trott, who again is one of my absolute all-time favourite players. He's got 161 out in that game. Was that the best batting performance that you ever produced in first-class cricket?
Yeah, I probably surprised myself, to be honest. I can't remember too much of it, but I think the guys were pretty surprised. They didn't expect anything like that. Yeah, we were in the pot, mate. We were in trouble, so I think we're 180 odd for eight, and they'd got sort of 360 odd or 300 and something. And so we'd really need to press on. And look, we just formed a partnership, and all of a sudden, you know, it's ticking over, and ended up getting some runs, which was quite nice. But like, it's not what I was there. I wasn't signed to score hundreds, mate. So ultimately, I was still pretty disappointed with how I went, because I wanted to take some wickets and really impact the game. But look, that wasn't for me. It wasn't a season for wickets. It was actually probably a finding out period the whole year. It's easy to say that hindsight looking back, but yeah, it probably was just a finding out period of what county cricket's like, what's required, and, you know, do I want to be a part of it? So ultimately, over the year, it was, you know, it was disappointing with the ball. I would have liked to have done more, but but going forward, it taught me a lot of lessons.
Of course, yeah. And we'll talk about, obviously, your rise at the Bears in due course. But, Jeet, do you remember who your first ever wicket was in county cricket?
No, I don't, mate. You're going to have to tell me.
Really? I'm surprised by that.
No. There's the things I don't remember, mate. Trust me, I do not remember things in cricket. I remember games. We're having some nostalgic moments towards the back end of this season just gone. And it was quite cool to try and reminisce some of the games that we played in. And so once we started doing that, I could remember moments. But, I mean, I don't remember much, mate, to be honest with you. Like, I tend to play the moment and then move on to the next one. And, you know, there's been a lot of games in there that probably get muddled up. But yeah, I don't remember those small things.
No worries, I can refresh the memory. It was Joe Sayers, Yorkshire opener, scored 173.
Yeah. He was a good player.
Looking at that, yeah, he was 173, not bad. And Jeets, I know you've just mentioned there about the nostalgia. Let's look back then, because of course, from those humble beginnings, you establish yourself as, in my opinion, the Bears' best ever overseas player. I know that we did have Lara, we had Donald. Further back as well, we had Kalachara and Rohan Kanoi. But I just wanted to know, over the course of 11 seasons, if there's just one moment, or maybe three, what would you pick out as your defining moment in a Warwickshire shirt?
I don't know if there's any defining moments. I just think, well, there's probably a few in terms of memories, but like I've said this before, and maybe because I don't like to dwell on certain my individual moments, but you know, it's when we win games. It's actually really good fun. Yes, we've won titles along the way, and you know, but the games we've won, drawn, and even some of the tough losses have been really good memories for funny reasons. You know, just for reasons of oh, that was really hard work, or we didn't deserve to, or just you know, I think that's just been cricket for me. You know, like being Wisden, getting Wisden Cricket of the Year, getting awarded that was pretty cool. After a really good year at 2014, I think the club was amazing. You know, winning the T20, then finals, Lords final, and then coming second in the championship. Well, that was pretty special. And obviously beating Lancs in that T20 final, so that was quite nice. Winning the championship 2012, you know, that's pretty cool. Well, really cool. I didn't play in that last game. I went on New Zealand duty, but came back and was there for that Worcester game. And to see the excitement on your teammates' face, I think they're the things that I remember the most. And they're probably the most defining things is the guys I played with and the amount of fun, amount of hurt we had, the amount of times we just sat in the changing room having a beer and thinking, wow, what an effort that was. They're the moments I'll cherish the most, I think.
Well, I think that's quite a nice way of looking at it, to be fair. And of course, 2012, we sealed the title at New Road, which is never bad, is it? Winning
that's not a bad place. No, that's not a bad place to win the league as a Warwickshire fan, is it? I mean, that's obviously the winning the league ahead in the equivalent for Lancashire. So yeah, that's not a bad place at all. But yeah, I mean, as you said, there's some good moments in there. Obviously, the 2014 T20 win for me was a frustrating one. But I mean, looking back on that from a supporter's perspective, that was obviously like a Lancs fan perspective. That was, the game was so good, wasn't it? Coming out to that last over with Flint off in. And
an immense game. And
yeah,
obviously
yeah.
Big player stand up and Wokesy bolted an amazing over. And, you know, Freddie was there at the end and it added to the drama. But look, that was a really cool day for the club, for the guys involved. And I think it paid back a lot of people in terms of white ball prowess. Like we'd been good at white ball cricket, but to win a title, pretty special. You know, 2010, the boys went on to win the CB40, I think it was then. But, you know, to win, to constantly have trophies coming in suggests that you were doing things at the right time. And you don't always win white ball games of cricket, doesn't matter how well you're playing. You know, there's just some things that just don't work your way. So you need a lot of luck to win those titles. And we had it, mate. And we had a good – I just looked at some of those photos, some of those pictures there. And I think we had a good squad, good fun squad who just, you know, were pretty keen on playing, but also impressing every time they did play.
Yeah, it was a fantastic squad. I mean, for those listening to the podcast, you can't see the photo behind me at the moment, but my word, some of those players in there. Someone who I don't think gets enough recognition for his time with the Bears is Varun Chopra. Magnificent player.
Yeah, Choppy was awesome for us, and then he took over the captaincy and did a great job again. It was a shame that, you know, he moved on, but he had aspirations to go play for England, and he wanted to go really test himself, which was perfect. That's part of the job of counties, is to produce players for England. And that hasn't worked out for him since. Well, not as much as he'd like anyway. But like Choppy was awesome for us. And, you know, he stood up in big moments. He scored big hundreds. And once he was in, it was like, as a bowler, you thought, sweet, we've got feet up all day here. And we'd tuck into the soup all day. But yeah, it was some good people, mate, some really good people. William Porterfield, who, you know, goes under the radar with a lot of that stuff. And yeah, he's such a legend of a bloke. Obviously, Tim Ambrose has just finished as well. But everyone on that side, even the younger guys, Paul Best, you know, Jonathan Webb, Freddie Coleman, Sammy Hain was a youngster. It's Keith Barker and Chris Wright and their impact in that group. Like, it's amazing stuff. And we were so blessed, Ricky Clark, you know, we were so blessed to have players, Laurie Evans, that could win titles. We like I said, there were times that we got really lucky and they helped us get us through.
Yeah, Laurie in particular in the final, 53 is what he got.
Yeah, I mean, Purdy all day. Purdy that whole day was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And yeah, just looking back at that as a Warwickshire fan, those were fantastic days. They really were. And of course yourself, Jeets, let's not forget that 2014 across all three formats, 107 wickets. You mentioned it beforehand. Wisden Cricketer of the Year in 2014. You won the award in 2015. And in that T20 blast, 25 wickets, leading wicket taker in the entire tournament. So, yeah, very, very fond memories for me personally, as a Bears fan.
It was a really good year, mate. It was a really good year. Yeah, I mean, obviously the numbers are cool. But it was good because we were playing some really competitive cricket. And, you know, every day we walked out knowing that someone was going to do something special. And it was really exciting to be on the pitch when someone did that. So it was a good, fun year. And then to go on to win those awards, I never expect to get Wisden Cricket of the Year or anything, but I didn't even know what it was about until I received the award. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, my old man's pretty, he keeps talking about it. And you know, in that same year, we had our first daughter. So, you know, a lot happened in the year. And, you know, Kate and I always owe a lot of our success to how well our babies have behaved, because they've allowed me to keep working anyway, sanely anyway.
Yeah, pretty good year for the Patel family then, 2014.
Yeah, it was all right. It was all right.
And I did just want to talk about another year as well, and that's 2016, because the Royal London One Day Cup final, for myself, and I suppose for many Warwickshire fans out there, is one of the proudest days that I've had as a Warwickshire fan. In terms of, I know it's very cliche, but it really was a complete performance with both bat and ball. I remember beforehand a lot of people were just discounting us, saying, Surrey are going to win this because they'd lost the year beforehand. Jeets, how proud of a moment was that for you? Because to beat a team as big as Surrey, I know we're also a big team as well in the county circuit.
Surrey had some superstars in that team.
Exactly. Like, Burns, Sangakkara, yeah. Stoneman, Folks. It was an incredible team. And of course, the Currans.
The Currans were coming through, yeah.
Jason Brewer's opening batting. Yeah, they had a good side. Bassey, yeah. I mean, they had a decent side.
But how momentous of an occasion was that for you? Because I imagine for yourself, Lords, of course, it's this historic ground, iconic in world cricket. How big of a moment was that for you personally to win a Lords final?
Well, it probably started a couple of years prior. We lost to Durham, you know, at the Lords final. And we actually gave it a good shake, even though we got 120 or something. We actually gave it a really good shake to try and get there. But it didn't eventuate. Which, you know, we were so close. We were probably, if I was to put it into measurements, we were probably 3 millimetres away from winning that game. But it didn't work out. And then to get to the Lords final and to play Surrey, and there was a lot of pressure on Surrey to win that after losing the year before to Gloucester. And it was mentioned. You know, we spoke about how they'd be under the pump and how we just needed to keep reacting, having some sort of proactiveness around our plans, but ultimately just keep trying to stay ahead of them in every little way. And we got a breakthrough quite early with, because Roy came out blundering, smashing us everywhere, actually, to be honest with it. And then Laurie takes this blinding catch at mid-wicket, and that was it. And the game ended effectively there. I mean, we just took over. And Atik Javid and myself came into the game. We took wickets throughout. Ollie Hannah-Dolby bowled an exceptional spell to the left-handers where he just went across them and they kept playing and missing. And Sangakkara eventually nicked one. And like, I still think that'll be one of Ollie's proudest moments. And I'm good on him. Like, he deserved every bit of credit he gets for that, because that's a match-winning moment. And then you get Wokesy come back at the death with a reversing ball and clean them up. You know, and we had nerves from, you know, the years before where, you know, we'd tied a game at Lords in a Lords final. We'd lost, in my time anyway, we'd tied, we'd lost, and now we had an opportunity to win a game. And Trotty and Haney and Belly, that, I mean, it was a walk in the park for them, but the distress around the training room was it was bouncing off walls.
One of them games, yeah.
Nerve-wracking. It was, yeah, it was one of those games that would, yeah. You know, if it wasn't at Lords, it wasn't a final, no one would really be watching. We'd just be sitting there talking rubbish like we always are. But there was a lot of focus. There was a lot of intent. And, you know, I was really stoked for Trotty to be walking off not out there with Sam Hain, because it's a great taste of success from a legend, but also a guy who's just starting his career. So that, you know, one gets to sign off and one gets to begin with what it's like to win a trophy. And it's really cool to see that moment, to see those guys walk off. But you'll never forget. I remember walking back into the hotel and seeing, you know, 100, 150 supporters, Warwickshire supporters in the hotel bar. And that was pretty, it was nearly tear-jerking for the fact that they stayed around to try and, just to see us, to have a drink with us and to say hello.
Yeah, what a day. As I said, definitely my proudest moment. And it's funny as well, because when you watch it back and throughout the Warwickshire innings, you just hear the U Bears and it just gets louder and louder and louder. Every boundary, every four, every single as well. And
it's one of those moments where you get closer to a win. Like, you get, you know, edge closer to a win in a final, and it just, like, the realisation that you're going to get over the line, and then you just almost start celebrating early.
Well, that's just it. Because we'd had disappointment prior, I was very circumspect about that. Oh, I sat in the background of it all and just watched everyone jump around in front of me as we were hitting boundaries and singles to win, still knowing that cricket's never done until we score that last run.
Yeah, it's never over till it's over, is it? But, Jeeton, would you say that Warwickshire side from sort of, you know, that kind of 2014-2016 period, which that's like the best Warwickshire sort of setup that you were involved in?
No, I think it started earlier, to be honest with you. I think the groundwork had started prior to that. You know, winning in 2011, where I didn't play the red ball, but the back end of the season, they ended up second. I think it started then. I think a lot of the success personally started then, where they, as a club, realised how good they could be and how close they are to winning stuff. And from there, they're going to win in 2012, and then they win another trophy in 2014, 16, 18. You know, it started back there, and slowly it built momentum, and we gained strength as a group. And we also stayed quite steady as a group over that period. We didn't lose many players or gain many players. All we did was we have young guys coming through that want to be a part of something that was quite cool. And then as it always happens with sport and sporting teams, there's not a mass exodus, but players leave. And they leave because they have to. You know, they have to go to find new pastures or want to go play for England or, you know, look for opportunities to get better. You know, whatever it is, players retire like it has recently. And it's just a shame that, you know, that cycle probably ended at 2018. And we are in a transition, still in a transition, I believe, again now, like with three more senior players leaving. But they've made some decent signings. So hopefully, going forward, they can start afresh with their mindset, you know, and what's going to create the next period or next era of winning trophies.
Yeah, I was there for that last game as well, Kent. Final game of Division 2. Thank goodness for that. We're back in Division 1 now. But yeah, that was, I don't know, I'd almost describe that as a very bittersweet day, because of course we had the trophy success, we'd been promoted again, but then at the same time, I mean, for me personally, I've already mentioned Jonathan Trott, absolute cricketing idol of mine. He retired. We lost Keith Barker as well, and Chris Wright, who had been so instrumental in 2012. Again, it just was one of those strange days, and I suppose an unforgettable day in many ways, because you've said goodbye to these legends, but again, it's that realisation afterwards that, oh, I'm not going to see these guys at Edgbaston again.
Yeah.
No, I hate losing. I hate losing my teammates. I hate it when they retire or leave, because it, you know, all those moments, all those good fun moments, all those times you work hard or you argue or you disagree or you're disappointed in each other. They all lead to that moment when they're going to no longer be around. I was glad in 2018 that we obviously went back into Division 1 after going down in 2017. But also I was more happy for the fact that legends of the club, in terms of Wright, Barks, Trotty, you know, all the guys that they had to leave at that time, got to experience one last bit of success, one last piece of silverware. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, you know, that was one trophy I hadn't won in county cricket, so I was pretty keen to win it, and so was Tim Ambrose. And yes, it's a Division 2 trophy, and people say, well, it's only Division 2, but you've still got to play 14 Champo games.
They all count, don't they? They all count.
But yeah, you've still got to be better than the rest of them. So it was nice for us to celebrate their success with a trophy in front of us.
Yeah, it hurts, doesn't it, when, like, obviously someone retires who's been there for a long time. And I felt similarly when Ashford Prince retired. Like, he's my all-time favourite Lancs player. And, yeah, when he retired, it was tough. But, yeah, I guess that's the... As you say, Jason, that's what happens in sport, isn't it? Everyone moves on.
It has to, mate. It's got a life cycle, you know. Everyone yeah. has to move on. And whether it's the club has to move on or the player itself, you know, it's some move for more money, some move for a better position in the team, some just want to retire. You know, some are just done with cricket or, you know, need a break. And that's fine because we're all human beings and we all
it's
have
life,
to
isn't it? Yeah.
Play the game. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose we have to talk a bit about the flip side as well. I mean, obviously, you can sense the Warwickshire bias, can't you, listeners out there? We have just spoken about the favourite moments. But of course, in a Warwickshire shirt, we have had some very, very tough moments as well, in particular 2017, where we won one game all season. Jeets, what would you say was your toughest moment at Edgbaston?
Oh, mate, there's been heaps. You know, we can cover off on all the trophies we've won and all the games we've won and all the fun times, but there's been heaps of tough moments. There's been heaps of conversations of where we're going, what we're doing, how we're going to get there. And they happen every year, and I think they happen with every team. You know, there's a blip on the radar and you don't know where your next win's coming from or where your next performance is coming on. People will get individualistic, and that's probably the one thing that we could control for that long period of time because we were winning trophies along the way. People could still sense that there was something to play for or towards. And look, we probably just got a little bit old too early. You know, when I say old, well, I was 37. You know, you've got the likes of Bell and Trot, 36, 35. So these guys are starting to just get there a little bit older, a little bit wiser, a bit more wary of how their body's tracking. Things are starting to catch up. But also, you know, we had guys because of that on the radar with New England stuff. And that can just distract you. I'm not making any excuses. I just think we may have lost our vision a little bit. You know, did we start to maybe understand that we were getting an older side and we hadn't planned for that period there? We had, you know, a lot of guys coming off contract and it was going to be hard to either keep them or to satisfy them. So, you know, a lot of those guys were guys who were stalwarts. And, you know, again, we're going to have this little period again. The club's going to have another little period again with it. They're going to have to find a way. But that's exciting. Like, for me, it's like, let's find out another way. Let's find their way to do it. And I hope they do it. They don't just fall into the same mantras that they've been. We as old players, tried to force upon them. It's their time to run that team now. So hopefully they can go on and decide a way they want to play and really stick to it and embrace everyone within that group that does that.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, we do have some good youngsters coming through, like to Rob Yates, Dan Mousley as well. Of course, Sibley, big fan of Sibley, fantastic player in Red Bull cricket. So, yeah, as you said, and rightfully so, it is going to be almost a transition. I'm not expecting ridiculous amounts of silverware, in particular for the next couple of seasons, seeing as we don't have a coach at the moment as well.
But, yeah, that's true.
It's something that we'll learn. And of course, it's going to be interesting as a Warwickshire fan, of course, see how that journey does progress heading into the future as well.
But I also think that's exciting. You've got a new coach. You've got a captain who's a year old in the role. You've got new players coming. So we've got a blank sheet to play with, you know, and we can just start again and go, right, what's our
rebuild.
Way? Yeah, what's our way? What's the Warwickshire way now? We've got different personalities who are going to run the team. So, like, they've had to listen to me and Bell and, you know, da-da-da and telling them how to do their job as opposed, you know, and now they've got their opportunity to say, right, this is how we're going to do, this is how the Warwickshire way, this is how the Warwickshire works, and this is what the Bear and Ragger staff means, but this is what it means to us now. So hopefully they take that on board and they run with it.
Yeah. But Jeeks, looking back as well, I did just want to ask this because we mentioned Trott, Bell, Porterfield, Chopra. We've had so many fantastic players over the years at Edgbaston and, of course, yourself in that bracket as well. But who would you say, if you had to pick one, would you say in terms of pure talent, let's say a batsman and a bowler, really stood out to you as almost the best, per se?
Oh, look, you know, Ricky Clark was pretty good, mate. His white ball skills, certainly the bowling was fantastic. His ability to catch at slip, you know, important runs at important times. He was pretty special. Tim Ambrose, you know, he can't, I mean, obviously Tim and I have got a good relationship as friends, but his ability as a wicketkeeper who's been around the traps and, you know, had hip replacements and, you know, bits and pieces to keep coming back and keep performing behind the stumps. And he may not have got the runs he would have liked at the back end of his career, but he certainly was a, he moved to Warwickshire to play for England and he achieved that. You know, that was pretty cool for him. But, you know, you've got, it's just, there's everyone that has their moment in the sun. And that's what we need to realise as cricketers, that it's not always sunny. You know, it's sunny out there at the moment, but but you know I'm trying to get at. Like, there's moments when that's your moment. And the one thing I thought we had at the club, especially during that golden period, is we had a lot of contributors. You know, we had a lot of guys who would contribute at different times. And whether it was Boyd Rankin bowling a side out or was Chris Wright forming a partnership at number 10, you know, it was always someone doing something at the right time. And that was probably what I would say what's made that team. It wasn't any one individual. It would be just the contributions at the right time.
I feel like that's always such an important, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche thing, but team spirit is such an important thing. You know, you're never going to get anywhere if you're not mates, or not mates, but even if you don't get on. Obviously, everyone isn't going to be best mates with everyone, but, you know, if you can't even like stand someone, then you're not, as a team, you're really going to get anywhere. So, yeah, as a team spirit's a bit of a cliche, but...
And I'm not going to say that we loved each other in the changing room. We're not.
Oh, no, nobody does. Not everybody does.
Everyone you work with, because...
Exactly, yeah. A common goal, yeah.
But ultimately, the common goal was to write how we're going to get X amount of runs and take X amount of wickets. And
exactly, yeah.
I stood there at the right time. And that was probably the most pleasing thing is, you know, as much as one player that did this, this and this, it was actually a whole bunch of us doing our little things at the right time.
At the right time, yeah. As I say, it's a bit of a cliche, but I guess that's sport.
Keith Barker was immense, not from what he just did with the ball, but his contributions as a batter, and then, you know, he'd create rough for me. So, like, he worked in another way that, you know, it affected the game, but it helped us win games.
Yeah, exactly. And let's bring the topic of conversation to this season then. So, you know, in the 2020 season, obviously it was surreal. Let's be honest, it was totally weird for fans not being able to go, and even more so for players and officials and coaching staff. But from a Bears perspective, then, Jason, how did you feel that the 2020 season went?
It was just messy. It was really messy. You know, I know this affected everyone in county cricket. In fact, any spectator, everyone, it was just really messy. It was difficult to get a grasp of when we were going to start, what we were doing. Then the Bob Willis Trophy, which is a great little initiative by the ECB to get something up and running for, and, you know, something to play for in terms of silverware. But we just couldn't get on the park. We couldn't get a roll on the park. And, you know, the Red Bull stuff, I know the guys sort of felt like they got in positions to win games, but just couldn't get over the line. And then the T20 was typical Warwickshire, really, in some ways. We start well, blow out, and then, you know, try to grapple our way back into a finals berth. And it didn't quite work for us. It just didn't. Injuries in a short period of time, guys... You know, we didn't have the camaraderie we used to at the club because of, obviously, COVID. So we couldn't really do what we do. You know, we've got this lovely, massive changing room where we're always hanging out together and trying to get on with each other, and it just wouldn't work. It didn't work this year. And overall, very messy. And, you know, now there's three senior players that have retired at the same time, myself, Ambrose and Bell. And then you get Trouts leaving. You know, it is just a messy year, and I think once we get through all of this mess, and hopefully in December when, you know, they've got a new coach lined up and the club can really form a direction of where they want to go. We had a new chief exec, a new chairman come in. Like, there was a lot of things changing, a lot of hands. So it was, like I said, messy at Edgbaston, and for no other reason than just a lot of moving parts, if that makes sense. I think by April next year they'll be in a much better state to be able to compete better by being a bit more sound.
Of course, yeah, I would agree with that. But it was messy for everyone, wasn't it, really? I mean, we didn't even know there was going to be a season until the 1st of August, did we?
No.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing. It was so sudden, really, wasn't it? It was so sudden, and a lot of cricket obviously crammed in, and that was beneficial to in some ways and not so much for in others. And obviously the fact that like finals day is in October and stuff, that was that's a whole other situation. But
oh man, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, that's the 2020 season. That's 2020 for you.
Fair enough. But yeah, it was a very, very strange season, especially for us, Joe. Definitely, yeah, watching it all at home. But Jeets, I suppose we have to touch upon how it ended, because it was it's a horrible way, to be honest, in terms of the T20 campaign. I think Northants scored 100 runs in 7 overs or something like that, but Tom Taylor just completely blitzed us. In retrospect, I don't really know how to word this, to be honest, but you're most saddened by the way in which it ended at Edgbaston.
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing, mate. I still think about it now, but I'm more gutted. Yes, we didn't qualify. Yes, we got beat in my last game of cricket. But I'm more saddened by the fact that, you know, Adam Hose and Dan Mousley put on a massive partnership, get us to a winning total, or what we thought was a winning total anyway. And, you know, that was probably the saddest moment of that day, is when we come off the park and Hose is lying on one of the couches just distraught. You know, he scores 100. Which are usually match-winning moments, and he only plays for match-winning contributions. And you know, he was so pumped to get his first 100, and for the club in that moment where we were 30 for 4, I think. And to see his face, and that was hard. That was hard for me to take. But look, after that, probably an hour later, we'd finally realised. Look, you know, this, like I said, there was four guys that had given a lot to that club over the last 4 to 24 years, and we want to celebrate what they'd given. So it was pretty much gone, you know, within an hour. And I'm glad it was, because we shouldn't be judged on that one performance. Like I said, it was a messy year, and there was a whole lot of things that we couldn't control that didn't help us. But that was probably the saddest moment, is seeing an Adam Hose distraught like he was, for the fact that he'd done everything he could, and you know, the rest of us couldn't get him over the line.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, for us as Warwickshire fans as well, I just remember watching that home, and there's just a bit in the live stream, and it's just as teams are coming off, and I think it's you and Ambi coming off together. And I'll tell you why this is just, it's awful for Warwickshire fans. I mentioned earlier about 2018. I know it wasn't exactly the fairy tale send off for Trotty. He would have preferred it in an England shirt, like Alistair Cook, of course.
Yeah.
But at least he got to do it in front of fans. We won, of course, we had some success. But this time, I mean, three of our greatest ever players, yourself obviously included, Jeets. I mean, someone who I've been watching personally ever since my first season in county cricket in 2009. And in a way, we kind of both started our county journeys at the same time there. But to watch it end like that is one of the hardest moments I've ever had in cricket, because it almost doesn't feel worthy. When you've had someone give 11 years, 11 seasons of blood, sweat, tears, you've obviously made the move over to England every single one of those years, which is a massive commitment and a sacrifice to your family. And then to watch it end like that in front of absolutely no one, it was gutting, to be honest. And I'm sure you probably felt the same way in many regards.
Yeah, I mean, I probably had a lot more time to build up to that moment. You know, I obviously didn't know it was going to happen that day, but I had a lot more time to build up to it. And I knew it was coming. I knew it was going to be like that. And I think Tim had understood that. And, you know, when Bally had retired mid-season or mid that era period, I thought he realised as well. It's not ideal, but there's never an ideal time to leave the game. You know, sure, you can win a trophy and decide, right, in that spur of the moment, I'm done, and it'll be a different story. But that's a spur of the moment thing. Oh, these decisions that we'd made were plans. They were, you know, executed in a situation that we couldn't control. And, I mean, there's so many other people right now, Aaron, that, I mean, let's be honest, me walking off Edgbaston in my last game is a very small thing compared to the rest of the world. And I had to keep thinking of that. I would have loved to have had, you know, fans in the ground and to be able to shake all their hands and say thank you, because it's been one of those periods in my career where I need to thank people. You know, they've been such great supporters, and you're obviously one of them. But yeah, they've been such good supporters, even through the hard times. They've always, you know, patted me on the back and given me the energy to go again. And they've always wanted me back. So, look, it's one of those things that would have been nice. Yes, of course, we would have, you know, loved to have walked off finals day with a full crowd. But the reality is we couldn't. And, you know, we get dealt cards and we just have to deal with it at the time.
Fair enough. Very well. I was going to say a very mature, but of course, Jeets, I suppose that's expected at 40. of course.
It doesn't mean I'm mature, mate.
But in a way, were you ever tempted to maybe come back? Let's say in 2021, there is a chance, let's say even half crowds, not even for a testimonial. Would you be slightly tempted, or for you, cricket's over now?
Look, I think in, you know, after lockdown and started in March, in both countries, almost around the whole world, when we thought cricket wasn't going to happen, I contemplated playing again. And I thought, look, why not just go one more year? And, you know, if the club were willing to accommodate me on a new contract for one year contract, then they'd certainly look at it. But I'd had a little bit of a taste of the coaching side. So, I was always thinking, well, eventually I'd like to go down that route. So I had a bit of a taste with England and in the off season prior to this season just gone, and I really enjoyed it. And I think the guys I dealt with really enjoyed it as well. So, you know, there was a bit of success and it was, you know, it was starting to bubble away. And when COVID hit in March, April, it was like, oh, everything has to go to the back burner for a while. But I always still had this bubbling away in me. And looking at developing spinners and cricketers around the world is something that I'd like to give back to the game. You know, I certainly feel like I've got a little bit of knowledge to be able to help with. So come, you know, March, June, April, May, June, I was like, I think I'm done. I think lockdown, the time I spent with my family in lockdown, I didn't realise how important it was and how much I'd missed. You know, that 8 weeks was awesome. Like, probably the best fun I've ever had. It felt like Christmas holidays when I was a kid and everyone was on holiday for 2 months. You know, that's how cool it was. It was really cool. The time I spent then, which made me realise, look, yeah, I think you are done, you know? I think that you are done. And I went back and played, and I was lucky enough to get another, to be able to come back and play. And I think during that time, I wasn't playing red ball, which hurt a little bit. Like, I would have loved to have played red ball cricket to finish off, but that never eventuated. So I was done. I was like, right, I think I need to just do what I can, give as much as I can in these last 10 games, hopefully progress some cricketers along the way. Give back as much as I can these last little bit and be signing it off.
Definitely. And of course, that's very understandable. Of course it is. Yeah. And that's a massive sacrifice for your family. They've been absolutely immense throughout and they deserve a lot of plaudits for that, I think.
They do. Yeah. Your wife's put up with a lot, but she's stuck around. So, I mean, I don't know if it's I'm doing something well or, you know, we've got kids and she can't leave. So, yeah. No, it's good. She's done all right.
Fair enough. Looking back then in hindsight then, Jeets, what do you say was your favourite aspect of county cricket?
Do you know what? And this sounds weird because a lot of guys would be like, oh, man, it sounds ridiculous, but I loved playing. So a lot of my career up until about, you know, until county cricket started was I watched a lot of cricket. I was on the sideline a lot with New Zealand, obviously being number two spinner and behind Dan Vittori. We didn't play two spinners very often in New Zealand or... You know, I spent a lot of tours on the sideline. I played a lot for Wellington and I really enjoyed playing for Wellington, but I just wanted to play cricket. I didn't really enjoy training. Training got a bit boring towards the back end. But last 5 or 6 years, I'd rather be in the battle. So when I did train, I was in a battle with either myself or the guy I was practicing against. And I don't think the guys that, some guys would be like, mate, just let it go. It's just practice. But that's the only way I could get up to play cricket. So I love the battle. And what county cricket offered me was an opportunity to play 5, 6 days a week. And then the weeks off, just be like, right, no cricket, let's go play golf, let's hang out with the family, whatever it is, and then let's come back to cricket.
Something
and
different.
Give another good bash again. Yeah. You know, I learnt that quite quickly. I learnt that I couldn't take the game home because it festered away and I wouldn't come back with the same excitement the next morning. So I'd have to leave the game at the game. And then once I got home, I was on dad duty until the morning again. But once I learnt that and... I think that's the one thing that I loved about county cricket was being able to play nearly every second day and be on the park.
Fair enough. There is one thing I want to ask actually about. It's more of a lighter topic. Obviously, you've played for, you know, well over a decade in county cricket. And is there any particular moment when you've come up against a fellow Kiwi that sort of springs to mind, or like a more competitive moment? You know, when a New Zealander is on the opposition team, that springs to mind.
Yeah, well, the good thing recently that New Zealand have been able to release a lot of players to play over there. But mate, as soon as I cross the white line, like I'm in battle mode. So I turn into this real dark cricketer who, you know, Luke just wants to win the moment. So I'd always get into a battle with whoever I was playing with. But yeah, there were a lot more Kiwis playing now. So it's been quite cool to be able to come across the Rutherfords and the Munros of recent, Martin Guptills. And, you know, I would have loved to have played against more of them, but like, it was just cool to be able to go out and play against guys you played a lot of cricket with along the way as well. So, you know, probably Colin Munro is probably the one. You know, you've got to get him early, otherwise he just destroys you. So
he gets a big one, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, so we used to have a lot of good ding-dongs. It was good fun, actually.
Fair enough. I always think it's good fun, well, all around the world when you see, you know, fellow countrymen playing against each other when they maybe have played together. Yeah,
we're professional sports. We want to win, mate. So, you know, like, that's the big thing, is to try to get one over your opposition, and they're always the overseas players. So that's the other side of it. You want to beat your overseas player as well.
Yeah. Did you ever get like sort of, obviously you were competitive, but did you ever feel like you had to better the off spinner on another side? For example, if they got 3 wickets in an innings, did you ever feel, well, this is like more of a motivation to get 4, or was it just sort of play your own game?
You always had to measure yourself against how the game was being played and the opposition. And, you know, a lot of the time you'd pair up against who your opposite is and make sure, you know, you're always trying to do better than them. It doesn't always work, but, yeah, yep. Of course, mate. Like, you know, if it's a spinning wicket, then I want to make sure that I'm the chief spinner in that game. And if it isn't, I want to prove that, you know, spinners can still contribute. So it was, for me, it was always about, right, what does the team need first? But also on the other side is that little, you know, little guy on that shoulder saying, come on, mate, you can do better than him.
Fair enough. Good attitude to have, for sure.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it is or not, but it worked, so.
Exactly, and that's all that matters, to be honest. It did. It worked very, very well. And, Jeets, I just wanted to read these out, okay, and of course for the listeners at home, because looking back on your career, 742 wickets for Warwickshire, 473 in the County Championship, 128 in List A, 141 in the T20 Plus as well, our leading wicket taker by, I think, about 60 wickets. I think the next one is Neil Carter, if I'm not mistaken. We already mentioned Wisden Cricketer of the Year. You're also our captain in 2018 and 2019. In retrospect, what legacy do you think Jeetan Patel has left on Warwickshire County Cricket Club?
I don't know. I don't know if that's for me to answer. I'm probably going to either talk myself down or talk myself up in this situation. I don't know what my legacy is. Maybe it's the fact of day in, day out graft. You know, always go to work and always trying to win, always trying to give my best. And that does sound cliche, but it is actually quite real. There weren't any days off. There was just, every day was a work day for me. You know, I'd have the saying of go to work, do your job and go home. And obviously there was a little bit of every now and then go to the pub in between that. But that was me trying to celebrate success or wash away some of the stuff that we didn't want to remember. But yeah, that was my one thing is, you know, and the guys would take the mickey about, right, boys, we're off to work today. Let's go to work on these guys. And I don't think, for me, it became a job. And I heard Jose Mourinho, of all people, say something the other day about those that call professional sport a job are wrong. You know, they lose the passion. I don't quite agree with that, but I see where he's coming from. I mean, I always had passion. I think anyone who watched me play would understand the passion I did have out there. But yeah, it became a job for me and became, right, this is 24/7. I don't stop until I make sure that we do everything. Well, I do everything I can for the club to succeed.
Yeah, just wanted to pick up on that bit of passion. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, even as a, obviously I'm a neutral, total neutral in this, and you know, even in your sort of wicket celebrations, you can tell the passion is just like so obvious. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, mate. Well, the wickets became harder to get towards the back end, so like it was just, you know, it was more of a relief some of the time.
Fair enough. But I guess to end things off, then the question on certainly on Warwickshire fans' lips, and I guess on everyone's lips, is what does the future hold for you, Jeetan?
Well, obviously with COVID around right now, Kate and I are sort of just been discussing it recently more about where we're going to go down. But I think the immediate future, let's just, you know, look at Christmas. Let's finally have a Christmas with the family. You know, for the last 20 years, I've been on the road or playing on Boxing Days to having a train on Christmas Day. And it's nice to just have a really cool Christmas with the family. And then in the new year, let's look at some more roles. Hopefully in the coaching department, hopefully can get back to England and take up a role with some of the spinners in England. But in between now and then, there's a little bit of commentary that I'm going to take up with the new Spark deal, which is taken over from Sky here in New Zealand. So that'll be quite cool to stay current in the game, learn a new part of the game. You know, it's okay being out in the park and playing and being involved in the game, but to be able to call the game is probably, it's a different art. So that'll be interesting to learn about that. But just keep progressing this coaching thing. Other than that, you know, I'd like to be on the seniors golf tour, but it's, you know, it's going to take a lot of work. So, and maybe more time away from home. So I don't think the wife will let me do that.
Well, yeah, Jeets, all we want to say is we wish you the very best of luck with that, of course. And yeah, especially with the coaching, because when you look at England...
Yeah, to see you in England, like, to see you in, like, you know, on England's coaching staff would just be obviously hugely beneficial to England and the whole country. So, yeah, I mean, that would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy working with those guys. I think there's a great little bunch of spinners there that England are producing. ECB have got you sort of lined up with, you know, even as young as MR Verdi and these guys coming through. And so it'd be nice to be able to help them, maybe because I'm current, maybe because they've seen me do something quite recently, it might help them. But look, to be honest with you, I want to keep developing as a player, as a person, as a cricket coach, as someone who is involved in cricket. And so there's a lot of ways to do that, and there's a lot of avenues that make up this game that we love watching. So look, I'd want to stay in it as much as I can, but if not, we're quite happy for the next few weeks, at least next 6 weeks, I suppose. A bit of school drop off, bit of summer sport, and maybe even Christmas along the way.
Fingers crossed for us as well. Yeah, hopefully we're not in lockdown again.
I have my fingers crossed for you and the UK that, you know, are missing some valuable time together. But hopefully you guys get to have Christmas also.
Yeah, definitely so.
Very good point. But that does bring us to a conclusion of today's main segment of the podcast then, Jeets. So into our next one then, we go into the fan questions. Now, we did have quite a few of these on Twitter, of course. You're a popular figure, in particular in the Edgbaston area. But our first question then is from Andrew Fuller. And he says, being one of the greatest ever Bears players, if you had the choice, would you rather have a stand named after you at Edgbaston or have a statue built outside of the ground instead?
Neither, mate. Neither. No, no one deserves anything like that. Not on this era, I think. You know, those that built the club, those that really laid the foundations at Edgbaston deserve all those honours. It's, you know, it's always going to be the Holly Stand, so it should never change. I could have just as good as party in the Holly Stand as if it was called anything else. No, that's not for me. I think Chris Wokes is probably the next one that deserves some sort of big memento outside that ground for his service to the club and to England as well.
So this next one is from Spencer Clark. And it is, apart from Edgbaston, what's your favourite ever county ground?
Oh, obviously everyone likes going to Lords. Lords is a cool spot to play for the, you know, the tradition. The lunches are really good. You get looked after. I quite enjoy going to the Oval, to be honest with you. That was quite nice. I'm not going to lie, mate, but I didn't like going to Old Trafford. I think it's not my favourite. So, but that's, look, that's not what the question was it? So I'll continue. Durham, I enjoy going to Durham. I know that sounds weird, but you know, you're up the far north. It's actually quite good fun up there. York was nice to go back to a club ground and play. I know that's an outground, but I quite enjoyed a lot of them, to be fair. Blanks would be the one, Old Trafford would be the one that I dislike the most, to be
fair. Fair enough. everyone likes and dislikes, don't they?
Yeah, well, that's right. It's all opinion, mate. It's all opinion.
Exactly, it is. So the next one then is from Matt Grubb, and he asks, how proud were you to be made Warwickshire captain, and how did you approach the role?
Yeah, I mean, I had a discussion with another player during the 2017 season, and he said, why wouldn't you do it? Because we're obviously we're in a pretty dark space, and what would you want to take over? And I said, no. But then I had to think about it, and I thought, look, why not? If the club needs someone, you know, I've been around, I know everyone at the club at the time. I knew how we wanted to play cricket. I could put my little stamp on where we wanted to go. And my biggest challenge, what I really wanted to achieve something was, like I said, I hadn't won Division 2 before and I wanted that title. So I thought, why not try and influence the most? I probably came out pretty hot as a captain. Demanded a lot, expected a lot from the guys, but along the way I learnt different techniques to deal with different people. And, you know, it sort of helped me to, especially towards the back end, to be able to go to guys a lot. You know, to be able to let them be who they needed to be and express themselves. And as long as I always only ever asked that they gave 100%, just like I would. And I'm sure everyone else would have seen that from me, but all I wanted from them was to make sure they go and give 100% and not be okay with mediocre performances.
Fair enough. I think that's a pretty good morals to have as a captain, shown as a leader. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I made some mistakes, mate. That's the thing.
Everyone makes mistakes, though, don't they? That's the thing. I guess that helps people grow and develop, especially in professional sport. So yeah. I guess mistakes are all a part of it, aren't they?
They are. They certainly are.
Yes, of course they are, and in life in general, to be fair. And then this final one, this isn't a question per se, but this is from Darren Purnell, and this is just a message really for you, Jeets. And Darren just wanted to thank you for always taking the time to chat to the members. And he's put, even when you probably had more pressing things on your mind.
Yeah, I actually, see, this is the thing. I really enjoy the members. You know, we're lucky at East Beston to have that huge, beautiful members bar that overlooks the ground. And it's a great vantage point for cricket. We have very, very good supporters. They understand the game. Sometimes they expect a little bit more from us, you know, but that's okay. That's because they spend their days and money to come down and watch us and only want us to do well. But, you know, I thank them for their support, but they're pretty cool, the guys we've got, people that we have up there, and they have some very good stories of the times that they've been able to watch cricket.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of 1994 pops up in those conversations.
Obviously, 1994, that won't ever be repeated by any team. So, but we can always live in hope.
Yeah, we hope not for the sake of Warwickshire. It's like a USP for us, almost. But, yes, well, that is it for our fan questions then, Jeet. So just before we end today's podcast then, we do, of course, have our favourite segment, which is teammates. Now, yes. Jeetan, you don't know how this works, do you?
No.
The concept. Nope. Okay. Well, perfect. Then I will introduce the segment to both yourself and, of course, the listeners. So in front of us, we have a series of questions ranging from pretty bizarre ones to some more normal cricket-related ones, which all surround Jeetan, your teammates at Edgbaston. So we'll start off with the first one then. And as I said, it's very similar to Soccer AM. Who has the best nickname in the Warwickshire dressing room?
Man, they're all boring. They're all really boring. Hannon Dolby, Our Face, but like, yeah, they're all really boring. They're all just like abbreviations of their names, so it's pretty boring stuff. Yeah.
I have to agree with that because we have obviously self Jeets, Burgess is Burge, Wokesy,
Belly,
yeah, and Trotty. I mean, we had, yeah, just maybe. Add a Y or an S.
Yeah, that's how a lot of nicknames work. And it's funny because a lot of the time their nicknames are longer to say.
Yeah.
Like Belly is obviously longer than Bell, so yes, yeah. It's bizarre, isn't it?
Definitely, although he did have the Duke of Bellington as well. So moving on to our next one then, Jeets, who was the teacher's pet? Who was always hanging around the coaches at Warwickshire?
You know what? I reckon Sam Hayne has this real love-hate relationship with the coaches. Like, he always wants more from them, which is really good, especially from the batting coach Frosty and Trouts and Westy. But he'd also get on their nerves a lot as well, just annoy them. So I don't know if it's one of those love-hate teacher's pet things.
Fair enough. Is he always pestering them to, you know, have a net or have balls thrown?
Yeah, he's always in their face, and obviously coaches love that. But then it gets a little bit too much, and he's obviously loves an opinion, so they sort of bounce. Sometimes I think they're on side with each other, and sometimes I think they just purely hate each other. But it's quite funny to watch.
The next one is, who is Mr. Hard as Nails?
Oh, Rob Yates. Toughest man in the world. Like, you wouldn't pick it, but that guy's, yeah, hard as nails. In fact, occasionally they call him Nails around the nets, but he just gets on with it, mate. He just doesn't, there's nothing phases him. He just gets on with it.
Fair enough.
Interesting choice there. I mean, as you said, he doesn't look like it, but fair enough.
He wouldn't look like Nails, but he just literally gets on with it. Doesn't matter how hard it is or how tough it is, right? Let's just do it.
Fair enough, then I suppose you know better than us in that regard.
Well, no, I don't, but that's what I've seen.
Moving on to our next one then, Jeets, I'll probably put you in this bracket as well. Who's Mr. Celebration?
Myself, I think Hannon Dolby's up there. Yeah, those two are pretty good. Jake Lintott was good this year. Lynn Sanity, he was good for us. But those two are the biggest. Us three would probably be the biggest. Two spinners in there. Obviously, that's my doing, so I've all set upon people.
Yeah, Lintott, brilliant. Linsanity. Yeah, we've had him on the pod. Fantastic guest.
Yeah.
Jake, re-sign the contract, please. We want you back at Edgbaston.
Yeah, hopefully we can get him. I mean, this should do.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that is a developing story, I guess. So, yeah, look out for that one. But the next one is, who has the dodgiest dance moves?
All of us, mate. We're all shocking. I reckon Sibley, you know, rates himself. So if it depends what you call dodgy. Is dodgy like
a bit naff?
Like, yeah, they can't really dance.
Yeah, pretending to do it all. I think that's probably him, Sibley.
Fair enough. Moving on to our next one then. I'm not sure whether we have one at Warwickshire, but is there a selfie addict, someone who's always on their social media, always on the phone?
Oh, man, they all are. It's painful. They all are. All the youngsters are always on it. Yeah, they're all the same, mate. I don't think that anyone's, maybe because I'm not on any of it, so I can just abuse anyone, so it's quite easy to say. They all love their social media, mate. They all love it.
Fair enough. That's the first then, the whole team.
Yeah.
I haven't had that before.
Only because I'm not on it, so that's easy for me to say.
Yeah, fair enough. The next one, there's a bit of a two-parter here. The best dressed and the worst dressed.
Worst dressed is Henry Brooks. He's shocking. But that's probably because he's so long, like nothing ever fits, so he just looks like lumpy. Best dressed, I'll barely be up there. Wokesy's the man, like Wokesy's like, you know, our Brad Pitt in the chamber, he just does everything, mate. He's God's son, isn't he? So he's just getting everything.
Yeah, he can score runs, take wickets, can field, he can do everything, can't he?
Beautiful family, plays golf like a genius. Like, what do you want, mate?
Yeah, I reckon there's a few more categories you may come into.
Meals, like, I mean, who does that?
Yeah. What a guy Chris Wilkes is.
Yeah, Mr. Perfect. And yeah, been pretty good for both the Bears and England over the years. So moving on to our next one. This is a bit more cricket related. Who's the biggest badger in the Warwickshire dressing room?
I reckon we've got a few badgers. It's quite cool watching the badgers in terms of knowledge, in terms of who knows what. Dan Mousley be up there. He knows a lot. He follows a lot. But again, it's quite cool to see a young kid come into the chain room and have the knowledge of the stats and the numbers. You know, it's a bit boring sometimes when you're talking about gameplay, but he's quite knowledgeable around the game. So it's quite interesting listening to him, because you never get a talk. He just listens to it. You just have to listen. But yeah, he's one guy who's onto it.
Fair enough. And you wouldn't rate your badger skills?
No, I'm terrible. I'm really bad with that stuff. Like, I'd need to do my research to be able to go into a conversation. But if we're talking about gameplay or something like that, then I might be able to have an input.
Fair enough. The next one is, who is the dressing room joker?
Who's the joker? Belly was really, he was really good at it for a while. And then I think he grew up and he realised that people were starting to play pranks on him, so he had to stop. But Belly was quite good. There'd be a lot of misdemeanors in the changing room that no one knew where they came from, but everyone knew it was Belly. So it was, I'd say he was probably the best.
Yeah, cheeky chappy, old Ian. Definitely. Moving on to our next one then. Right, Jeets, you do know what I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is, don't you?
Yeah.
Perfect. Who do you think in the Warwickshire dressing room would be most likely to win it?
Can I include a physio?
You can do.
Go for it. Yeah, Gerard Mostert, eh? Like, he nothing phases him, that guy. Nothing phases him. And, you know, if he had to sleep in the snow nude, he'd do it if he had to. So he's probably the one guy. But outside, if it was one of the players, I'd probably say Alex Thompson. He's a big outdoors man anyway, but he'd be able to affect a lot of those challenges quite easily, I think. He's right. And he's a strong lad. He loves that sort of stuff. And that boys went down to the army barracks a few years ago. And he wanted to stay. Everyone was like, mate, what's wrong with you? We need to get out of here. But he wanted to stay. So he's that sort of character. He loves the tough stuff.
Classical PE teacher, I suppose.
Yeah, just boring, mate.
Who do you think would do the worst? Who do you think would last the day?
Probably me. No, I don't know. I never did. Well, I'd be okay, I reckon. I'd probably just learn to get on with it. But I reckon Burgess would struggle. Burgess would really struggle. You know, not being able to do his hair or shower or whatever, but yeah, I'd say Burgess.
Fair enough. The penultimate question then, I don't know if this still applies to Warwickshire, I don't know if any counties played football last year, but yeah, who is the best footballer?
Mousley would reckon he is because he's young and full of it. But I reckon Wokesy again, like, he's just Wokes. I mean,
he probably practices a lot with England as well.
Yeah, he does, mate. And I think he was quite good as a youngster.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's certainly probably the best on the circuit now. Like, we had Keith Barker, who obviously was at Blackburn, so he was pretty good. But Wokesy would be now.
Yeah,
fair enough.
We've had some decent ones at Warwickshire over the years in terms of the old football. But moving on to our final question, Jeets, and I suppose this is probably going to be the one which all Warwickshire players are eagerly anticipating.
This will be hotly debated.
Yes. Who is the best golfer in the Warwickshire dressing room?
Oh, Tim Ambrose, by a long stretch. There's no beating him. I know Sam Hain would want to compete, but Ambrose is the best, especially if he's had a couple of beers on board, then you're struggling. So his, after lockdown, I think he really had a good push at not going pro, but, you know, playing as much as he could.
Making up for the lost time.
Yeah. So he actually, and when I got over there and I wasn't playing in a Red Bull, we played a lot of golf together. I would have liked to have been one of the better golfers in the group, but he's surpassed all of us by a long way. Yeah, so he hasn't got the best handicap, but that doesn't mean he's not the best golfer.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I suppose alternative to that is the worst. Who would get the wooden spooning, the old golf?
Well, a lot of guys are playing now, so it's pretty hard to tell. Everyone reckons they can bomb it as far as each other, so they all reckon they should be on, you know, they bomb it 350 yards, and they don't, but it's all they're interested in. So, you know, there's a lot of guys who can whack a golf ball, but a lot of guys who are actually decent all round. But I'm just trying to think. I can't see Henry Brooks being very good, but he does play a lot. Yeah, Alex Thompson doesn't play at all, so that'd be interesting to see. He's quite robotic, so that'd be quite interesting to see how he plays. But yeah, I don't want to slam anyone too much for their lack of golfing prowess.
Fair enough.
Definitely. Well, obviously some good answers there, Jeets, but that does bring us to an end to today's podcast then. So, Jeets, just before we leave, have you got anything to kind of just end on? Anything to say, for example, for the Warwickshire fans out there?
Oh, no, just again, thank you for all your support. Thanks for being such good friends. Thanks for being able to kick me up the bum every now and then when I need it. But ultimately, to always be there for me and my family and for our success, you know, and even through our losses, it's been a great 11 years, and you know, I will never forget the time I've had at the club. The Bear and Ragged staff means so much to me, and I know it means a lot to you. So hopefully I get to see you all at Edgbaston again or around the Trapes at some point. But stay safe, everyone in the UK, because that is very important right now. You know, I know not Boris isn't everyone's friend, but he's not wrong in saying please stay at home and look after yourselves, because you do want to have a Christmas and you do want to have a summer next year.
100% Jeets. And of course, from us too here at the County Cricket Podcast, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast today. And of course, from the inner Warwickshire fan inside of me, thank you for all of the service, Jeets. It was an absolute pleasure watching you from the stands for 11 years. It really was.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me as well.
No Thanks problem. For coming on.
Yep. Well, that does bring us to an end to this episode of the County Cricket Podcast then. To all of those who've tuned in, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.